To plan this year's SBPAS Al-Anon portion, and so far it's been going so well. So not to waste any more time, we'll get right into it. She just served as New York South chair. Our Al-Anon speaker tonight is Sarah. One of the things I was thinking of before I came up was a few years ago, I went to the last Al-Anon International Convention. And one of the things they talked about was the family of recovery. And as someone, part of my internal story that brought me to Al-Anon was I told myself I didn't get to have a family. That wasn't going to be a part of my story, either as a young person or as an older person, you know, having children or getting married or anything like that. And what they said at the Al-Anon International Convention and with the AA speaker and the Al-Anon speaker and the ALA team speaker is that it's called the Al-Anon family groups for a reason. And that in recovery, we get to have siblings, brothers and sisters. We get to have new moms, grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles, all that good stuff. And one of the things they said was that AA will always be Al-Anon's cousins. So greetings from the cousins. So I'm going to tell my story in the old AA style, what it was like, what happened, why I'm here now. You can probably hear that I am a Midwesterner. How did I come to be in Melville, New York on this auspicious evening with these sick beats? I don't know. Al-Anon doesn't have nearly enough dance parties, so I'm going to bring that back. Okay, a little bit about me. So, I remember hearing once, I think this is the AA legend, Sandy B, I think, who wrote that one of the hallmarks of someone affected by alcoholism is that they dislike reality. And that is me. I dislike reality. I have always disliked reality. I have also always disliked change. One of the things that comes up in Al-Anon is sometimes our defects of character are referred to as coping mechanisms. And for me, that's partially true, but there are certain things that I came into in life with certain defects of character, and a dislike of change has always been one of them. The example I always give was, as a kid, I remember my mother saying that one day we were going to get rid of the couch and we would get a new couch. And I was appalled. And I asked, I was like seven, I barely had an allowance, and I asked if I could buy the couch because it was my couch, it was the best couch, and I did not want a new couch. And that is how I have lived my life. I will also say that I came into life, I don't know if this is something I learned or that I thought, but I was always very worried that there was something very wrong with me. And it was so wrong that no one was actually going to ever tell me. They could all see it, they felt sorry for me, and they thought there was something very wrong. And so a lot of my life was putting on armor to make sure that you never saw what was wrong with me. I wasn't even quite sure, but I thought that I was inherently defective. And I think that some of that came from trying to make sense of what I experienced in my home growing up. I didn't understand why, but you know, kids are perceptive. And I knew that my parents were unhappy. And they weren't really unhappy with each other until later, but I knew they were unhappy. I knew my mom was afraid of a lot of things. And I knew that I could go about my business in the home and be criticized. And I didn't know why. I oftentimes found that I was just doing normal things, but somehow I had done something wrong. I also didn't understand, and this is some classic kid stuff, but again, when you're a kid, you're just trying to make sense of it. I didn't understand why my dad didn't want to spend time with me and why he was angry all the time. It was very rare that he was angry directly at me, but I took it that way. And I thought it was my responsibility to make both my parents happy, to notice me and to spend time with me and to be the family that I thought that we should be. If I could reduce the Al-Anon facet of the family disease of alcoholism to one phrase, it would be, if you were different, I would be okay. That is the thing that got me into Al-Anon. And the people who I primarily believe need to be different were my dad, surprise, surprise, which was, I found out that when my parents split up when I was a teenager, I found out that he had had an affair. And I believe that as a result of that, I could never trust men and I would never get to have a relationship because he had damaged me beyond all belief. And then he like moved away. I took it really personally. And I thought, again, this is evidence that there's something wrong with me. The other person who I thought really needed to change was my BFF, my friend who I met when I was 14, who was my best friend in college. We referred to each other as our heterosexual life partners. And I thought that she would not go off and get married and that she would stay with me forever. And that is not how it works. I heard somebody speak recently and they said, I thought this was very good for my Al-Anon disease as well. It was, I want to be in charge of everything and I want you to come with me. And I was that person, 100%. By the time I graduated from college, I was pretty nuts. I was tormented by what other people were doing. Now, one of the things that I didn't share is that I was born into a home affected by alcoholism, and I did not know that at the time. What I did know was that my mom went to meetings, and my grandparents were also there. What I learned later was that when my mom was 12, my grandma had agreed to go to rehab and she hid in the alley behind the house. And the Amy's knew the alley was back there and they went and got her and they brought her to rehab. And a few years later, my grandfather went into Al-Anon, and God bless him. He was a senior engineer, former Marine, fought in Korea. And he had the humility to tell the women in the Al-Anon room that he was in the right room. He did not need to go to the AA room and that he needed their help. And one of the other cool things is that when I was 2 and my mom was feeling increasingly nuts, one of their amends to her for the home she grew up in was they lent her their car and they took care of me so that she could go to her first Al-Anon meeting. Now, that didn't, while that helped a lot, and I have since thanked my mother profusely for going to Al-Anon because I know things could have been a lot worse, the effects of alcoholism were still in the home. One of the things, though, that I will say is that if you are the first person in your family to be in recovery, it matters. It may or may not cause a train reaction. In my family, it did. And I firmly believe that I got into Al-Anon when I did because of the good example of people in AA and Al-Anon in my life. And one of the big gifts was that it was not forced on me. I give my mother a lot of credit. I'm not sure I could have done this. I'm not sure I could have had a child and been like, it's totally fine that you're tormented by other people and you think there's something wrong with you. But she kept it on her side of the street. She made amends to me. I knew how to work a program. when I got into Al-Anon, because I watched her do it, I knew you were supposed to make reach out calls. I knew you were supposed to get a sponsor. I knew you were supposed to work the steps. So eventually, and I'll tell you, let's see, I've got 7 minutes. I'll try and make it count. I went to my first AA meeting. Let me tell you about this. So I first got into recovery. I finally got desperate enough right after college, and in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, there's something called the Fitchburg Serenity Club. And we were driving past it once, and my mom said, oh, you know what's in there? There's recovery. If you ever need a meeting, you could go there. So I went there, and I had seen a lot of movies, and I thought it might be like when people go to a church and then there's somebody there and they like bring you in and talk to you and like the light of God shines down. Instead, I found a guy who asked if I was there for the AA meeting. And I knew enough to be dangerous. I didn't say no. I said, oh, I wasn't planning on it. It's not an open meeting, right? And he said, oh, no, it is. And then suddenly, all these alcoholics descended on the meeting, and I couldn't get out. And the meeting started. And it was a small room, and the chairs started going around the room. And you know, I'm in Al-Anon. I follow the rules, and I'm terrified. I'm going to bring, you know, to negative attention to myself. And I thought very much, because I know that carrying the message is a big thing, that if I ran away, someone would run after me, because no one comes to an AA meeting on accident. And they would be like, poor alcoholic, we have to bring her back. So I stayed in the room, and eventually the chairs got around to me, and I explained why I was there. And then a guy who hadn't been there at the beginning said, well, I guess it's an open meeting. So the good news was, there was a woman who was there who was a dual member. She took me over to the other room, which was pastel, and there were butterflies on the wall. For those of you familiar with Al-Anon, that's what a Al-Anon room looks like. And she said, next time you're going to come here. So I have many things for me, both in my family and outside, that helped me get into Al-Anon. I have 5 minutes left to tell you about working the steps. Let's do it. So I got into Al-Anon in Wisconsin. It took me a while to get a sponsor. The reason for that is my mom and my grandparents worked an awesome program, and I thought I got it by osmosis. I knew a lot of slogans. It took me a while to, and this is how codependent I was. It took me a while to admit that I had my own problem. Eventually I did, and I got a sponsor. It has made all the difference. I've since had, and I'm my fourth sponsor. They have all been awesome. They have all given me amazing things. And I'd like to tell you some of the things I learned working the steps at Al-Anon. Step one, admitting that I was powerless over alcoholism, other people, places, and things, and that my life had become unmanageable. I was so type A that when I wrote my powerlessness list and shared it with my sponsor, and she told me I had not passed to step two, I cried. And she said, great, now we have some powerlessness. And this is how I learned that I was not going to get my way in the program. I was not going to get my way and get better. And that has made a big difference too, because my will does not know better. One of the things I firmly believe is that my loving higher power conspires against me for my happiness. My way is not the way forward. I really love theater. And so one of the words that's helped me a lot in step one is admitted. In theater, it means that you have a ticket and the door opens and they let you into the theater. The way I think of admission today is that there is something waiting outside. It has a ticket. Am I willing to let it in? It is going to wait. I'm going to skip over step two, which is awesome. I don't have time, y'all. I've got four minutes and 20 seconds. Step three was when the first time I got relief from obsession about another person. I told you about my BFFs, who's going to get married to an offensively average man from my perspective. I had opinions. And every day as I was walking to the train to work, I talked to her in my head. This is also a symptom of the family disease of alcoholism for me. I argue with someone who is not there, and I tell them what I think. And one day after working step three, and I was taught the 1-2-3 waltz, I do 1-2-3, you know, I go through the steps over and over. I realized one morning I was not talking to her. And I realized, oh my gosh, it worked. One of the things I really believe about recovery is I don't believe it's going to work, but I'm willing to try because I don't have anything else. And then I am surprised and moved when it does. Steps four and five changed my life. They continue to change my life. It was the first time that someone I feel actually saw me and loved me, both those things. Previously, I feel like I contorted myself. I tried to chameleon myself into something someone else would like. I heard a phrase recently, which was, before recovery, my higher power was the look on your face. And so I always calibrated myself so that the look on the other person's face, that higher power, looked well on me. But that was the first time I was honest. Something I heard that I carry with me today that has made all the difference is someone in a meeting said, God calls me not to be good, but to be honest. And as someone who tried so hard to be a good little girl and failed, the idea that God calls me to be honest first and then I can get somewhere means a lot to me. 2 minutes and 30 seconds, let's go. Let's see, step six and seven, I resurrender. I firmly believe that the higher power through Bill Wilson knew that those of us affected by alcoholism would see our defects of character, and the first thing I would try and do is control them. So in step six and seven, I resurrender. I say, not only do I not know what to do with my outsides, I don't know what to do with my insides either. Please help. Steps 8 and 9, I got to make amends. Most of mine were living amends, changed attitudes, getting out of people's business. A lot of it was an extraction of myself where I had been in other people's business where I was not supposed to be. It was easier for me to make living amends than to say I'm sorry, but I've learned to say I'm sorry too. Step 10, I did not have a good relationship with step 10 because I believed I'm a perfectionist. I mentioned I had a male in them. I believed every day a step 10 meant that I had failed. And instead, what I learned is that I am a human being and that if I don't have a resentment each day, I'm not doing it right. I'm not living enough. And so if I have one resentment and one fear at least each day, I am living. And I have this 10th step to help deal with that. I love step 11. One of the things about me is I love animals. Step 11, prayer meditation. The way I think of it at its best is I am the dog. I am the dog. And I let God pet me. And we sit together. And it's nice. In step 12, I get to carry the message. Being a sponsor is one of the biggest gifts of the Al-Anon program. I don't feel like I really grew up until I heard somebody else's fifth step. If you're just getting started, you know, in recovery, sometimes we say, don't stop until the miracle happens. I say, don't stop until you've heard somebody else's fifth step. That was the big miracle for me because I felt like I was a trustworthy person. I have 48 seconds. I'm going to try and say a couple things. One is that I try and have compassion for myself today. In Al-Anon, we talk a lot about self-love, and I always kind of groan on the inside. I'm like, ugh, if I love myself, I'm going to be insufferable. But what I will say is that I have grown in this area, and I have come to really like myself. There are a lot of things I like about myself, and I really feel like someday, when I'm not going to be Sarah, I'm going to miss her a lot. Because she likes all the same things as me. Let's see, Heather mentioned my service. I was New York South area chair. I'm outgoing. This has been one of the biggest course of miracle girl on my recovery ever. I never knew that people could openly hate me and I would be okay. I would not wish it on anyone else, but I will say that it was an important lesson for me to learn and it has served me. You know, the last thing I'll say, and I know I'm at time and it's time to hand it over to the next speaker. So I mentioned that my family was in recovery. One of the reasons I got into service was because my grandfather was also a GR. And I knew I got to see grandpa when I went to area assemblies. I don't know how many of you have had the privilege of going to an Al-Anon or an AA funeral, but it's one of the most beautiful experiences that I've ever had. And I remember when my grandfather passed, you know, it was a loss, and I still miss him terribly. However, I remember somebody from his home group came to me and said, gosh, we're going to miss him. He spent 30 years sitting in that chair, and I know it was my loving higher power inside of me, because what came out of my mouth was, but that's where the newcomer sits. And that's how I think about it in life. I get my chair for this lifetime. I get to share my recovery with people like you, people in the Al-Anon rooms, people of all walks of life who come for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And then when it's time to go, a newcomer's going to sit in my seat, a newcomer's going to stand at this podium and tell you their story. Thank you for having me.